Pavel came in with the plates. Bruno couldn't help but notice that his hands were shaking slightly under the weight of them. And when he stepped back to his usual position, he seemed to sway on his feet and had to press a hand against the wall to steady himself. Mother had to ask twice for her extra helping of soup before he heard her. And he let the bottle of wine empty without having opened another one in time to fill Father's glass. "Herr Liszt won't let us read poetry or plays," complained Bruno during the main course. As they had company for dinner, the family were dressed formally, Father in his uniform, Mother in a green dress that set off her eyes, and Gretel and Bruno in the clothes they wore to church when they lived in Berlin. "I asked him if we could read them just one day a week, but he said no, not while he was in charge of our education."
"I'm sure he has his reasons,"
said Father, attacking a leg of lamb.
"All he wants us to do is study history and geography," said Bruno, "and I'm starting to hate history and geography."
"Don't say hate, Bruno, please," said Mother.
"Why do you hate history?" asked Father,
laying down his fork for a moment and looking across the table at his son, who shrugged his shoulders, a bad habit of his.
"Because it's boring," he said.
"Boring?"
said Father.
"A son of mine calling the study of history boring? Let me tell you this, Bruno," he went on, leaning forward and pointing his knife at the boy. "It's history that's got us here today. If it wasn't for history, none of us would be sitting around this table now. We'd be safely back at our table in our house in Berlin. We are correcting history here."
"It's still boring," repeated Bruno, who wasn't really paying attention.
"You'll have to forgive my brother, Lieutenant Kotler,"
said Gretel, laying a hand on his arm for a moment, which made Mother stare at her and narrow her eyes.
"He's a very ignorant little boy."
"I'm not ignorant,"
snapped Bruno, who had had enough of her insults. "You'll have to forgive my sister, Lieutenant Kotler," he added politely, "but she's a hopeless case. There's very little we can do for her. The doctor says she's gone past the point of help."
"Shut up," said Gretel, blushing scarlet.
"You shut up," said Bruno with a broad smile.
"Children, please," said Mother.
Father tapped his knife on the table, and everyone was silent. Bruno glanced in his direction. He didn't look angry exactly, but he did look as if he wasn't going to put up with much more arguing.
"I enjoyed history very much when I was a boy," said Lieutenant Kotler after a few silent moments. "And although my father was a professor of literature at the university, I preferred the social sciences to the arts."
"I didn't know that, Kurt," said Mother, turning to look at him for a moment. "Does he still teach, then?"
"I suppose so," said Lieutenant Kotler. "I don't really know."
"Well, how could you not know?" she asked, frowning at him. "Don't you keep in touch with him?" The young lieutenant chewed on a mouthful of lamb, and it gave him an opportunity to think of a reply. He looked to Bruno as if he regretted having brought the matter up in the first place.
"Kurt," repeated Mother, "don't you keep in touch with your father?"
"Not really," he replied, shrugging his shoulders dismissively, and not turning his head to look at her. "He left Germany some years ago. 1938, I think it was. I haven't seen him since then."
Father stopped eating for a moment and stared across at Lieutenant Kotler, frowning slightly.
"And where did he go?" he asked.
"I beg your pardon, Herr Kommandant?"
asked Lieutenant Kotler, even though Father had spoken in a perfectly clear voice.
"I asked you where he went," he repeated. "Your father, the professor of literature. Where did he go when he left Germany?"
Lieutenant Kotler's face grew a little red, and he stuttered somewhat as he spoke.
I believe he is currently in Switzerland," he said finally. "The last I heard, he was teaching at a university in Bern."
"Oh, but Switzerland's a beautiful country," said Mother quickly. "I haven't ever been there, I admit, but from what I hear—"
"He can't be very old, your father,"
said Father, his deep voice silencing them all.
"I mean you're only, what, 17? 18 years old?"
"I've just turned 19, Herr Kommandant."
"So your father would be in his 40s, I expect?"
Lieutenant Kotler said nothing but continued to eat, although he didn't appear to be enjoying his food at all.
"Strange that he chose not to stay in the fatherland," said Father.
"We're not close, my father and I," said Lieutenant Cutler quickly, looking around the table as if he owed everyone an explanation. "Really, we haven't spoken in years."
"And what reason did he give, might I ask," continued Father, "for leaving Germany at the moment of her greatest glory and her most vital need, when it is incumbent upon all of us to play our part in the national revival? Was he tubercular?"
Lieutenant Cotler stared at Father confused. "I beg your pardon?" he asked.
"Did he go to Switzerland to take the air?" explained Father. "Or did he have a particular reason for leaving Germany? In 1938,
he added after a moment. "I'm afraid I don't know, Herr Kommandant," said Lieutenant Cotler. "You would have to ask him."
"Well, that would be rather difficult to do, wouldn't it, with him being so far away, I mean, but perhaps that was it. Perhaps he was ill."
Father hesitated before picking up his knife and fork again and continuing to eat.
"Or perhaps he had disagreements."
"Disagreements, Herr Kommandant?"
"With government policy. One hears tales of men like this from time to time. Curious fellows, I imagine. Disturbed, some of them. Traitors, others. Cowards, too. Of course you have informed your superiors of your father's views, Lieutenant Cotler?"
The young lieutenant opened his mouth and then swallowed, despite the fact that he hadn't been eating anything.
"Never mind," said Father cheerfully. "Perhaps it is not an appropriate conversation for the dinner table. We can discuss it in more depth at a later time."
"Herr Kommandant," said Lieutenant Cotler, leaning forward anxiously,
"I can assure you—"
"It is not an appropriate conversation for the dinner table,"
repeated Father sharply, silencing him immediately. And Bruno looked from one to the other, both enjoying and being frightened by the atmosphere at the same time.
"I'd love to go to Switzerland," said Gretel after a lengthy silence.
"Eat your dinner, Gretel," said Mother.
"But I was just saying—"
"Eat your dinner," Mother repeated, and was about to say more, but she was interrupted by Father calling for Pavel again.
"What's the matter with you tonight?" he asked, as Pavel uncorked the new bottle. "This is the fourth time I've had to ask for more wine."
Bruno watched him, hoping he was feeling all right, although he managed to release the cork without any accidents. But after he had filled Father's glass and turned to refill Lieutenant Cotler's, he lost his grip of the bottle somehow, and it fell crashing, glug, glug, glugging its contents out directly onto the young man's lap. What happened then was both unexpected and extremely unpleasant. Lieutenant Cotler grew very angry with Pavel, and no one, not Bruno, not Gretel, not Mother, and not even Father, stepped in to stop him doing what he did next, even though none of them could watch, even though it made Bruno cry and Gretel grow pale. Later that night, when Bruno went to bed, he thought about all that had happened over dinner. He remembered how kind Pavel had been to him on the afternoon he'd made the swing, and how he had stopped his knee from bleeding and been very gentle in the way he administered the green ointment. And while Bruno realized that Father was generally a very kind and thoughtful man, it hardly seemed fair or right that no one had stopped Lieutenant Cotler getting so angry at Pavel. And if that was the kind of thing that went on at Outwith, then he'd better not disagree with anyone any more about anything. In fact, he would do well to keep his mouth shut and cause no chaos at all. Some people might not like it. His old life in Berlin seemed like a very distant memory now, and he could hardly even remember what Carl, Daniel, or Martin looked like, except for the fact that one of them was a ginger.
Chapter 14. Bruno tells a perfectly reasonable lie. For several weeks after this, Bruno continued to leave the house when Herr List had gone home for the day, and Mother was having one of her afternoon naps, and made the long trek along the fence to meet Schmuel, who almost every afternoon was waiting there for him, sitting cross-legged on the ground, staring at the dust beneath him. One afternoon, Schmuel had a black eye, and when Bruno asked him about it, he just shook his head and said that he didn't want to talk about it. Bruno assumed that there were bullies all over the world, not just in schools in Berlin, and that one of them had done this to Schmuel. He felt an urge to help his friend, but he couldn't think of anything he could do to make it better, and he could tell that Schmuel wanted to pretend it had never happened. Every day, Bruno asked Schmuel whether he would be allowed to crawl underneath the wire so that they could play together on the other side of the fence, but every day Schmuel said no, it wasn't a good idea. "I don't know why you're so anxious to come across here anyway," said Schmuel. "It's not very nice."
"You haven't tried living in my house," said Bruno. "For one thing, it doesn't have 5 floors, only 3. How can anyone live in so small a space as that?"
He'd forgotten Schmuel's story about the 11 people all living in the same room together before they had come to Outwith, including the boy Luca, who kept hitting him even when he did nothing wrong. One day, Bruno asked why Schmuel and all the other people on that side of the fence wore the same striped pajamas and cloth caps.
"That's what they gave us when we got here," explained Schmuel. "They took away our other clothes."
"But don't you ever wake up in the morning and feel like wearing something different? There must be something else in your wardrobe."
Schmuel blinked and opened his mouth to say something, but then thought better of it.
"I don't even like stripes," said Bruno,
although this wasn't actually true. In fact, he did like stripes, and he felt increasingly fed up that he had to wear trousers and shirts and ties and shoes that were too tight for him, when Schmuel and his friends got to wear striped pajamas all day long. A few days later, Bruno woke up, and for the first time in weeks it was raining heavily. It had started at some point during the night, and Bruno even thought that it might have woken him up, but it was hard to tell because once he was awake there was no way of knowing how that had happened. As he ate his breakfast that morning, the rain continued. Through all the morning classes with Herr List, the rain continued. While he ate his lunch, the rain continued. And while they finished another session of history and geography in the afternoon, the rain continued. This was bad news, for it meant that he wouldn't be able to leave the house and meet Schmuel. That afternoon, Bruno lay on his bed with a book, but found it hard to concentrate, and just then the hopeless Case came in to see him. She didn't often come to Bruno's room, preferring to arrange and rearrange her collection of dolls constantly during her free time. However, something about the wet weather had put her off her game, and she couldn't face playing it again just yet.
"What do you want?" asked Bruno.
"That's a nice welcome," said Gretel.
"I'm reading," said Bruno.
"What are you reading?"
she asked him, and rather than answer, he simply turned the cover towards her so she could see for herself.
She made a raspberry sound through her lips, and some of her spit landed on Bruno's face.
"Boring," she said in a sing-song voice.
"It's not boring at all," said Bruno. "It's an adventure. It's better than dolls, that's for sure."
Gretel didn't rise to the bait on that one.
"What are you doing?" she repeated, irritating Bruno even further.
"I told you I'm trying to read," he said in a grumpy voice. "If some people would just let me."
"I've got nothing to do," she replied. "I hate the rain."
Bruno found this hard to understand. It wasn't as if she ever did anything anyway, unlike him, who had adventures and explored places and had made a friend. She very rarely left the house at all. It was as if she had decided to be bored simply because on this occasion she didn't have a choice about staying inside. But still, there are moments when a brother and sister can lay down their instruments of torture for a moment and speak as civilized human beings, and Bruno decided to make this one of those moments.
"I hate the rain too," he said.
"I should be with Schmuel by now. He'll think I've forgotten him."
The words were out of his mouth quicker than he could stop them, and he felt a pain in his stomach and grew furious with himself for saying that.
"You should be with who?" asked Gretel.
"What's that?"
asked Bruno, blinking back at her.
"Who did you say you should be with?"
she asked again.
"I'm sorry," said Bruno, trying to think quickly. "I didn't quite hear you. Could you say that again?"
"Who did you say you should be with?"
she shouted, leaning forward so there could be no mistake this time.
"I never said I should be with anyone," he said.
"Yes, you did. You said that someone will think you've forgotten them."
Pardon?
Bruno, she said in a threatening voice.
Are you mad? He asked, trying to make her think that she had entirely made it up. Only he wasn't very convincing, for he wasn't a natural actor like Grandmother, and Gretel shook her head and pointed a finger at him. What did you say, Bruno? She insisted. You said there was someone you should be with. Who was it? Tell me.
There's no one around here to play with, is there?
Bruno considered the dilemma he was in. On the one hand, his sister, and he had one crucial thing in common. They weren't grown-ups. And although he had never bothered to ask her, there was every chance that she was just as lonely as he was at Outwith. After all, back in Berlin, she had had Hilda and Isabel and Louise to play with. They may have been annoying girls, but at least they were her friends. Here she had no one at all except her collection of lifeless dolls. Who knew how mad Gretel was after all? Perhaps she thought the dolls were talking to her. But at the same time, there was the undeniable fact that Shmuel was his friend and not hers, and he didn't want to share him. There was only one thing for it, and that was to lie.
I have a new friend, he began. A new friend that I go to see every day, and he'll be waiting for me now, but you can't tell anyone.
Why not?
Because he's an imaginary friend, said Bruno, trying his best to look embarrassed, just like Lieutenant Kotler had when he'd become trapped in his story about his father in Switzerland.
We play together every day.
Gretel opened her mouth and stared at him before breaking into a laugh.
An imaginary friend, she cried. Aren't you a little old for an imaginary friend?
Bruno tried to look ashamed and embarrassed in order to make his story more convincing. He squirmed on the bed and didn't look her in the eye, which worked a treat and made him think that perhaps he wasn't such a bad actor after all. He wished that he could make himself go red, but it was difficult to do that, so he thought of embarrassing things that had happened to him over the years and wondered whether these would do the trick. He thought of the time he had forgotten to lock the bathroom door and Grandmother had walked in and seen everything. He thought of the time he'd put his hand up in class and called the teacher Mother and everyone had laughed at him. He thought of the time he'd fallen off his bicycle in front of a group of girls when he was trying to do a special trick and cut his knee and cried. One of them worked, and his face started to go red.
Look at you, said Gretel, confirming it. You've gone all red.
Because I didn't want to tell you, said Bruno.
An imaginary friend. Honestly, Bruno, you're a hopeless case.
Bruno smiled because he knew two things. The first was that he had got away with his lie, and the second was that if anyone was the hopeless case around here, it wasn't him.
Leave me alone, he said. I want to read my book.
Well, why don't you lie down and close your eyes and let your imaginary friend read it to you?
Said Gretel, delighted with herself now because she had something on him and she wasn't going to let it drop in a hurry.
Save you a job!
Maybe I should send him to throw all your dolls out of your window, he said.
You do, and there'll be trouble, said Gretel, and he knew that she meant it.
Well, tell me this, Bruno. What do you and this imaginary friend of yours do together that makes him so special?
Bruno thought about it. He realized that he actually wanted to talk about Shmuel a little bit, and that this might be a way to do it, without having to tell her the truth about his existence.
We talk about everything, he told her. I tell him about our house back in Berlin, and all the other houses and the streets and the fruit and vegetable stalls and the cafes, and how you shouldn't go into town on a Saturday afternoon unless you want to get pushed from pillar to post, and about Carl and Daniel and Martin, and how they were my three best friends for life.
How interesting, said Gretel sarcastically,
because she had recently had a birthday and turned 13 and thought that sarcasm was the very height of sophistication.
And what does he tell you?
He tells me about his family, and the watch shop that he used to live over, and the adventures he had coming here, and the friends he used to have, and the people he knows here, and about the boys who he used to play with, but he doesn't anymore because they disappeared without even saying goodbye to him.
He sounds like a barrel of laughs, said Gretel. I wish he was my imaginary friend.
And yesterday he told me that his grandfather hasn't been seen for days, and no one knows where he is, and whenever he asks his father about him, he starts crying and hugs him so hard that he's worried he's going to squeeze him to death.
Bruno got to the end of his sentence and realized that his voice had gone very quiet. These were things that Shmuel had told him, but for some reason he hadn't really understood at the time how sad that must have made his friend. When Bruno said them out loud himself, he felt terrible that he hadn't tried to say anything to cheer Shmuel up, and instead had started talking about something silly like exploring. "I'll say sorry for that tomorrow," he told himself.
"If Father knew you were talking to imaginary friends, you'd be in for it," said Gretel. "I think you should stop."
"Why?" asked Bruno.
"Because it's not healthy," she said. "It's the first sign of madness."
Bruno nodded.
"I don't think I can stop," he said after a very long pause. "I don't think I want to."
"Well, all the same," said Gretel, who was becoming friendlier and friendlier by the second, "I'd keep it to myself if I were you."
"Well," said Bruno, trying to look sad,
"you're probably right."
"You won't tell anyone, will you?"
She shook her head.
"No one. Except my own imaginary friend."
Bruno gasped.
"Do you have one?" he asked, picturing her at another part of the fence, talking to a girl her own age, the two of them being sarcastic together for hours at a time. "No," she said, laughing. "I'm 13 years old, for heaven's sake. I can't afford to act like a child, even if you can."
And with that, she flounced out of the room, and Bruno could hear her talking to her dolls in the room across the hall, and scolding them for getting themselves into such a mess while her back was turned, that she had no choice but to rearrange them, and did they think she had nothing better to do with her time?
"Some people," she said loudly, before getting down to work.
Bruno tried to return to his book, but he lost interest in it for now, and stared out at the rain instead, and wondered whether Shmuel, wherever he was thinking about him too, and missing their conversations as much as he was. Chapter 15. Something He Shouldn't Have Done. For several weeks, the rain was on and off and on and off, and Bruno and Shmuel did not see as much of each other as they would have liked. When they did meet, Bruno found that he was starting to worry about his friend because he seemed to be getting even thinner by the day, and his face was growing more and more grey. Sometimes he brought more bread and cheese with him to give to Shmuel, and from time to time he even managed to hide a piece of chocolate cake in his pocket. But the walk from the house to the place in the fence where the two boys met was a long one, and sometimes Bruno got hungry on the way, and found that one bite of the cake would lead to another, and that in turn led to another, and by the time there was only one mouthful left, he knew it would be wrong to give that to Shmuel, because it would only tease his appetite and not satisfy it. Father's birthday was coming up soon, and although he said he didn't want to fuss, Mother arranged a party for all the officers serving it out with, and a great fuss was made to prepare for it. Every time she sat down to make more plans for the party, Lieutenant Kotler was there beside her to help, and between them, they seemed to make more lists than could ever possibly be needed. Bruno decided to make a list of his own, a list of all the reasons why he didn't like Lieutenant Kotler. There was the fact that he never smiled, and always looked as if he was trying to find somebody to cut out of his will. On the rare occasions when he spoke to Bruno, he addressed him as "little man," which was just plain nasty, because, as Mother pointed out, he just hadn't had his growth spurt yet. Not to mention the fact that he was always in the living room with Mother and making jokes with her, and Mother laughed at his jokes more than she laughed at Father's. Once, when Bruno was watching the cam from his bedroom window, he saw a dog approach the fence and start barking loudly, and when Lieutenant Kotler heard it, he marched right over to the dog and shot it. Then there was all that nonsense that Gretel came out with whenever he was around. And Bruno still hadn't forgotten the evening with Pavel, the waiter who was really a doctor, and how angry the young lieutenant had been. Also, whenever Father was called away to Berlin on an overnight trip, the lieutenant hung around the house as if he were in charge. He would be there when Bruno was going to bed and be back again in the morning before he even woke up. There were a lot more reasons why Bruno didn't like Lieutenant Kotler, but these were the first things that came into his mind. On the afternoon before the birthday party, Bruno was in his room with the door open when he heard Lieutenant Kotler arriving at the house and speaking to someone, although he couldn't hear anyone answering back. A few minutes later, as he was coming downstairs, he heard Mother giving instructions about what needed to be done, and Lieutenant Kotler saying, "Don't worry, this one knows which side his bread is buttered on," and then laughing in a nasty way. Bruno walked towards the living room with a new book Father had given him called Treasure Island, intending to sit in there for an hour or two while he read it. But as he walked through the hallway, he ran into Lieutenant Kotler, who was just leaving the kitchen. "Hello, little man," the soldier said, sneering at him as usual. "Hello," said Bruno, frowning. "What are you up to, then?" Bruno stared at him and started thinking of seven more reasons to dislike him. "I'm going in there to read my book," he said, pointing towards the living room. Without a word, Kotler whipped the book out of Bruno's hands and started to flick through it. "Treasure Island," he said. "What's it about, then?" "Well, there's an island," said Bruno slowly to make sure that the soldier could keep up, "and there's treasure on it."
"I could have guessed that," said Kotler, looking at him as if there were things he would do to the boy if he were a son of his and not the son of the commandant. "Tell me something I don't know about it."
"There's a pirate in it," said Bruno, "called Long John Silver, and a boy called Jim Hawkins."
"An English boy?" asked Kotler.
"Yes," said Bruno.
Grunted Kotler.
Bruno stared at him and wondered how long it would be before he gave back his book. He didn't seem particularly interested in it, but when Bruno reached for it, he pulled it away.
Sorry, he said, holding it out again, and when Bruno reached for it, he pulled it away for the second time.
Oh, I'm so sorry, he repeated, and held it out once more, and this time Bruno swiped it out of his hand quicker than he could pull it away.
"Aren't you quick?" muttered Lieutenant Kotler between his teeth.
Bruno tried to step past him, but for some reason Lieutenant Kotler seemed to want to talk to him today.
"All set for the party, are we?" he asked.
"Well, I am," said Bruno, who had been spending more time with Gretel lately and had developed a liking for sarcasm. "I can't speak for you."
"There'll be a lot of people here," said Lieutenant Kotler, breathing in heavily and looking around, as if this were his house and not Bruno's. "We'll be on your best behaviour, won't we?"
"Well, I'll be," said Bruno. "I can't speak for you."
"You've a lot to say for such a little man," said Lieutenant Kotler.
Bruno narrowed his eyes and wished he were taller, stronger, and 8 years older. A ball of anger exploded inside him and made him wish that he had the courage to say exactly what he wanted to say. It was one thing, he decided, to be told what to do by Mother and Father. That was perfectly reasonable and to be expected, but it was another thing entirely to be told what to do by someone else, even by someone with a fancy title like Lieutenant.
"Oh, Kurt, precious, you're still here," said Mother, stepping out of the kitchen and coming towards them. "I have a little free time now, if..." "Oh," she said, noticing Bruno standing there. "Bruno, what are you doing here?"
"I was going into the living room to read my book," said Bruno. "Or I was trying to, at least."
"Well, run along into the kitchen for the moment," she said. "I need a private word with Lieutenant Kotler."
And they stepped into the living room together as Lieutenant Kotler closed the doors in Bruno's face. Seething with anger, Bruno went into the kitchen and got the biggest surprise of his life. There, sitting at the table, a long way from the other side of the fence, was Shmuel. Bruno could barely believe his eyes. "Shmuel," he said, "what are you doing here?" Shmuel looked up, and his terrified face broke into a broad smile when he saw his friend standing there. "Bruno," he said.
"What are you doing here?" repeated Bruno, for although he still didn't quite understand what took place on the other side of the fence, there was something about the people from there that made him think they shouldn't be here in his house.
"He brought me," said Shmuel.
"He?" asked Bruno.
"You don't mean Lieutenant Kotler?"
"Yes. He said there was a job for me to do here."
And when Bruno looked down, he saw 64 small glasses, the ones Mother used when she was having one of her medicinal sherries, sitting on the kitchen table, and beside them a bowl of warm soapy water and lots of paper napkins.
"What on earth are you doing?" asked Bruno.
"They asked me to polish the glasses," said Shmuel. "They said they needed someone with tiny fingers."
As if to prove something that Bruno already knew, he held his hand out, and Bruno couldn't help but notice that it was like the hand of the pretend skeleton that Herr List had brought with him one day when they were studying human anatomy.
"I'd never noticed before," he said in a disbelieving voice, almost to himself.
"Never noticed what?" asked Shmuel.
In reply, Bruno held his own hand out so that the tips of their middle fingers were almost touching.
"Our hands," he said. "They're so different. Look."
The two boys looked down at the same time, and the difference was easy to see. Although Bruno was small for his age and certainly not fat, his hand appeared healthy and full of life. The veins weren't visible through the skin, the fingers weren't little more than dying twigs. Shmuel's hand, however, told a very different story.
"How did he get like that?" he asked.
"I don't know," said Shmuel.
"It used to look more like yours, but I didn't notice it changing. Everyone on my side of the fence looks like this now."
Bruno frowned. He thought about the people in their striped pajamas and wondered what was going on at Outwith, and whether it wasn't a very bad idea if it made people look so unhealthy.
None of it made any sense to him.
Not wanting to look at Shmuel's hand any longer, Bruno turned round and opened the refrigerator, rooting about inside it for something to eat. There was half a stuffed chicken left over from lunchtime, and Bruno's eyes sparkled in delight, for there were very few things in life that he enjoyed more than cold chicken with sage and onion stuffing. He took a knife from the drawer and cut himself a few healthy slices and coated them with the stuffing before turning back to his friend.
"I'm very glad you're here," he said, speaking with his mouth full. "If only you didn't have to polish the glasses, I could show you my room."
"He told me not to move from this seat or there'd be trouble."
"I wouldn't mind him," said Bruno, trying to sound braver than he really was. "This isn't his house, it's mine, and when Father's away, I'm in charge."
"Can you believe he's never even read Treasure Island?"
Shmuel looked as if he wasn't really listening. Instead, his eyes were focused on the slices of chicken and stuffing that Bruno was throwing casually into his mouth. After a moment, Bruno realized what he was looking at and immediately felt guilty.
"I'm sorry, Shmuel," he said quickly. "I should have given you some chicken, too. Are you hungry?"
"That's a question you never have to ask me," said Shmuel, who, although he had never met Gretel in his life, knew something about sarcasm, too.
"Wait there. I'll cut some off for you," said Bruno, opening the fridge and cutting another three healthy slices.
"No, if he comes back," said Shmuel, shaking his head quickly and looking back and forth towards the door.
"If who comes back? You don't mean Lieutenant Kotler?"
"I'm just supposed to be cleaning the glasses," he said, looking at the bowl of water in front of him in despair, and then looking back at the slices of chicken that Bruno held out to him.
"He's not going to mind," said Bruno, who was confused by how anxious Shmuel seemed. "It's only food."
"I can't," said Shmuel, shaking his head and looking as if he was going to cry. "He'll come back, I know he will," he continued, his sentences running quickly together. "I should have eaten them when you offered them. Now it's too late. If I take them, he'll come in and..."
"Shmuel, here," said Bruno, stepping forward and putting the slices in his friend's hand. "Just eat them. There's lots left for our tea. You don't have to worry about that."
The boy stared at the food in his hand for a moment, and then looked up at Bruno with wide and grateful but terrified eyes. He threw one more glance in the direction of the door, and then seemed to make a decision, because he thrust all three slices into his mouth in one go and gobbled them down in 20 seconds flat.
"Well, you don't have to eat them so quickly," said Bruno. "You make yourself sick."
"I don't care," said Shmuel, giving a faint smile.
"Thank you, Bruno."
Bruno smiled back, and he was about to offer him some more food, but just at that moment, Lieutenant Kotler reappeared in the kitchen and stopped when he saw the two boys talking. Bruno stared at him, feeling the atmosphere grow heavy, sensing Shmuel's shoulders sinking down as he reached for another glass and began polishing. Ignoring Bruno, Lieutenant Kotler marched over to Shmuel and glared at him.
"What are you doing?" he shouted. "Didn't I tell you to polish those glasses?"
Shmuel nodded his head quickly and started to tremble a little as he picked up another napkin and dipped it in the water.
"Who told you that you were allowed to talk in this house?" continued Kotler. "Do you dare to disobey me?"
"No, sir," said Shmuel quietly. "I'm sorry, sir."
He looked up at Lieutenant Kotler, who frowned, leaning forward slightly and tilting his head as he examined the boy's face.
"Have you been eating?" he asked him in a quiet voice, as if he could scarcely believe it himself.
Shmuel shook his head.
"You have been eating," insisted Lieutenant Kotler. "Did you steal something from that fridge?"
Shmuel opened his mouth and closed it. He opened it again and tried to find words, but there were none. He looked towards Bruno, his eyes pleading for help.
"Answer me!" shouted Lieutenant Kotler. "Did you steal something from that fridge?"
"No, sir. He gave it to me," said Shmuel, tears welling up in his eyes as he threw a sideways glance at Bruno. "He's my friend," he added.
"You're..."
began Lieutenant Kotler, looking across at Bruno in confusion. He hesitated.
"What do you mean, he's your friend?" he asked.
"Do you know this boy, Bruno?"
Bruno's mouth dropped open, and he tried to remember the way you used your mouth if you wanted to say the word yes. He'd never seen anyone look so terrified as Shmuel did at that moment, and he wanted to say the right thing to make things better. But then he realized that he couldn't, because he was feeling just as terrified himself.
"Do you know this boy?" repeated Kotler in a louder voice. "Have you been talking to the prisoners?"
He was here when I came in," said Bruno. "He was cleaning glasses."
"That's not what I asked you," said Kotler. "Have you seen him before? Have you talked to him? Why does he say you're his friend?"
Bruno wished he could run away. He hated Lieutenant Kotler, but he was advancing on him now, and all Bruno could think of was the afternoon when he'd seen him shooting a dog, and the evening when Pavel had made him so angry that he...
"Tell me, Bruno!" shouted Kotler, his face growing red. "I won't ask you a third time."
"I've never spoken to him," said Bruno immediately. "I've never seen him before in my life. I don't know him."
Lieutenant Kotler nodded and seemed satisfied with the answer. Very slowly he turned his head back to look at Shmuel, who wasn't crying anymore, merely staring at the floor and looking as if he was trying to convince his soul not to live inside his tiny body anymore, but to slip away and sail to the door and rise up into the sky, gliding through the clouds until it was very far away.
"You will finish polishing all these glasses," said Lieutenant Kotler in a very quiet voice now, so quiet that Bruno almost couldn't hear him. It was as if all his anger had just changed into something else, not quite the opposite, but something unexpected and dreadful. "And then I will come to collect you and bring you back to the camp, where we will have a discussion about what happens to boys who steal. This is understood, yes?"
Shmuel nodded and picked up another napkin and started to polish another glass. Bruno watched as his fingers shook and knew that he was terrified of breaking one. His heart sank, but as much as he wanted to, he couldn't look away.
"Come on, little man," said Lieutenant Kotler, coming towards Bruno now and putting an unfriendly arm around his shoulder. "You go to the living room and read your book and leave this little to finish his work."
He used the same word he had used to Pavel when he had sent him to find the tire. Bruno nodded and turned round and left the kitchen without looking back. His stomach churned inside him, and he thought for a moment that he was going to be sick. He had never felt so ashamed in his life. He had never imagined that he could behave so cruelly. He wondered how a boy who thought he was a good person really could act in such a cowardly way towards a friend. He sat in the living room for several hours, but couldn't concentrate on his book and didn't dare to go back to the kitchen until later that evening, when Lieutenant Kotler had already come back and collected Shmuel and taken him away again. Every afternoon that followed, Bruno returned to the place in the fence where they met, but Shmuel was never there. After almost a week, he was convinced that what he had done was so terrible that he would never be forgiven. But on the seventh day, he was delighted to see that Shmuel was waiting for him, sitting cross-legged on the ground as usual and staring at the dust beneath him.
"Shmuel," he said, running towards him and sitting down, almost crying with relief and regret. "I'm so sorry, Shmuel. I don't know why I did it. Say you'll forgive me."
"It's all right," said Shmuel, looking up at him now. There was a lot of bruising on his face, and Bruno grimaced, and for a moment he forgot about his apology.
"What happened to you?" he asked, and then didn't wait for an answer. "Was it your bicycle? Because that happened to me back in Berlin a couple of years ago. I fell off when I was going too fast and was black and blue for weeks. Does it hurt?"
"I don't feel it any more," said Shmuel. "It looks like it hurts." "I don't feel anything any more," said Shmuel.
"Well, I am sorry about last week," said Bruno.
"I hate that Lieutenant Kotler. He thinks he's in charge, but he isn't." He hesitated for a moment, not wanting to get sidetracked. He felt that he should say it one last time and really mean it.
"I'm very sorry, Shmuel," he said in a clear voice. "I can't believe I didn't tell him the truth. I've never let a friend down like that before. Shmuel, I'm ashamed of myself."
And when he said that, Shmuel smiled and nodded, and Bruno knew that he was forgiven. And then Shmuel did something that he had never done before. He lifted the bottom of the fence up like he did whenever Bruno brought him food. But this time he reached his hand out and held it there, waiting until Bruno did the same. And then the two boys shook hands and smiled at each other. It was the first time they had ever touched.
Chapter 16. The Haircut. It had been almost a year since Bruno had come home to find Maria packing his things, and his memories of life in Berlin had almost all faded away. When he thought back, he could remember that Karl and Martin were two of his three best friends for life, but try as he might, he couldn't remember who the other one was. And then something happened that meant that for 2 days he could leave Outwith and return to his old house. Grandmother had died, and the family had to go home for the funeral. While he was there, Bruno realized he wasn't quite as small as he had been when he left, because he could see over things that he couldn't see over before. And when they stayed in their old house, he could look through the window on the top floor and see across Berlin without having to stand on tiptoes. Bruno hadn't seen his grandmother since leaving Berlin, but he had thought about her every day. The things he remembered most about her were the productions that she and he and Gretel performed at Christmas and birthdays, and how she always had the perfect costume to suit whatever role he played. When he thought that they would never be able to do that again, it made him very sad indeed. The 2 days they spent in Berlin were also very sad ones. There was the funeral, and Bruno and Gretel and father and mother and grandfather sat in the front row, father wearing his most impressive uniform, the starched and pressed one with the decorations. Father was particularly sad, Mother told Bruno, because he had fought with grandmother, and they hadn't made it up before she died. There were a lot of wreaths delivered to the church, and Father was proud of the fact that one of them had been sent by the Fury. But when Mother heard, she said that Grandmother would turn in her grave if she knew it was there. Bruno felt almost glad when they returned to Outwith. The house there had become his home now, and he'd stopped worrying about the fact that it had only 3 floors rather than 5, and it didn't bother him so much that the soldiers came and went as if they owned the place. It slowly dawned on him that things weren't too bad there after all, especially since he'd met Shmuel. He knew that there were many things he should be happy about, like the fact that Father and Mother seemed cheerful all the time now, and Mother didn't have to take as many of her afternoon naps or medicinal sherries. And Gretel was going through a phase, Mother's words, and tended to keep out of his way. There was also the fact that Lieutenant Kotler had been transferred away from Outwith and wasn't around to make Bruno feel angry and upset all the time. His departure had come about very suddenly, and there had been a lot of shouting between father and mother about it late at night. But he was gone, that was for sure, and he wasn't coming back. Gretel was inconsolable. That was something else to be happy about. No one called him Little Man anymore. But the best thing was that he had a friend called Shmuel. He enjoyed walking along the fence every afternoon and was pleased to see that his friend seemed a lot happier these days, and his eyes didn't seem so sunken, although his body was still ridiculously skinny and his face unpleasantly grey. One day, while sitting opposite him at their usual place, Bruno remarked, "This is the strangest friendship I've ever had." "Why?" asked Shmuel. "Because every other boy I've ever been friends with has been someone that I've been able to play with," he replied. "And we never get to play together. All we get to do is sit here and talk."
"I like sitting here and talking," said Shmuel.
"Well, I do too, of course," said Bruno. "But it's a pity we can't do something more exciting from time to time. A bit of exploring, perhaps, or a game of football. We've never even seen each other without all this wire fencing in the way."
Bruno often made comments like this because he wanted to pretend that the incident a few months earlier, when he had denied his friendship with Shmuel, had never taken place. It still preyed on his mind and made him feel bad about himself, although Shmuel, to his credit, seemed to have forgotten all about it.
"Maybe someday we will," said Shmuel. "If they ever let us out."
Bruno started to think more and more about the two sides of the fence and the reason it was there in the first place. He considered speaking to father or mother about it, but suspected that they would either be angry with him for mentioning it or tell him something unpleasant about Shmuel and his family, so instead he did something quite unusual. He decided to talk to the hopeless case. Gretel's room had changed quite considerably since the last time he had been there. For one thing, there wasn't a single doll in sight. One afternoon a month or so earlier, around the time that Lieutenant Kotler had left Outwith, Gretel had decided that she didn't like dolls any more and had put them all into four large bags and thrown them away. In their place, she had hung up maps of Europe that Father had given her, and every day she put little pins into them and moved the pins around constantly after consulting the daily newspaper. Bruno thought she might be going mad, but still, she didn't tease him or bully him as much as she used to, so he thought there could be no harm in talking to her.
"Hello?" he said, knocking politely on her door, because he knew how angry she always got if he just went in. "What do you want?" asked Gretel, who was sitting at her dressing table, experimenting with her hair.
"Nothing," said Bruno.
"Then go away!"
Bruno nodded, but came inside anyway, and sat down on the side of the bed. Gretel watched him from out of the side of her eyes, but didn't say anything.
"Gretel," he said finally, "can I ask you something?"
"If you make it quick," she said.
"Everything here at Outwith," he began, but she interrupted him immediately.
"It's not called Outwith, Bruno," she said angrily,
as if this was the worst mistake anyone had ever made in the history of the world.
"Why can't you pronounce it right?"
"It is called Outwith," he protested.
"It's not," she insisted,
pronouncing the name of the camp correctly for him. Bruno frowned and shrugged his shoulders at the same time.
"But that's what I said," he said.
"No, it's not. Anyway, I'm not going to argue with you," said Gretel, losing her patience already, for she had very little of it to begin with. "What is it anyway? What do you want to know?"
"I want to know about the fence," he said firmly, deciding that this was the most important thing to begin with. "I want to know why it's there."
Gretel turned round in her chair and looked at him curiously.
"You mean you don't know?" she asked.
"No," said Bruno. "I don't understand why we're not allowed on the other side of it. What's so wrong with us that we can't go over there and play?" Gretel stared at him, and then suddenly started laughing, only stopping when she saw that Bruno was being perfectly serious.
"Bruno,"
she said in a childish voice, as if this was the most obvious thing in the world,
"the fence isn't there to stop us from going over there. It's to stop them from coming over here."
Bruno considered this, but it didn't make things any clearer.
"But why?"
he asked.
"Because they have to be kept together," explained Gretel.
"With their families, you mean?"
"Well, yes, with their families, but with their own kind, too."
"What do you mean, their own kind?" Gretel sighed and shook her head.
"With the other Jews, Bruno.
Didn't you know that? That's why they have to be kept together. They can't mix with us."
"Jews," said Bruno, testing the word out.
He quite liked the way it sounded.
"Jews," he repeated. "All the people over that side of the fence are Jews."
"Yes, that's right," said Gretel. "Are we Jews?"
Gretel opened her mouth wide, as if she had been slapped in the face.
"No, Bruno," she said. "No, we most certainly are not. And you shouldn't even say something like that."
"But why not? What are we then?"
"We're..."
began Gretel, but then she had to stop to think about it.
"We're..."
she repeated, but she wasn't quite sure what the answer to this question really was.
"Well, we're not Jews," she said finally.
"I know we're not," said Bruno in frustration. "I'm asking you, if we're not Jews, what are we instead?"
"We're the opposite," said Gretel, answering quickly, and sounding a lot more satisfied with this answer. "Yes, that's it, we're the opposite."
"All right," said Bruno, pleased that he had it settled in his head at last. "And the opposite live on this side of the fence, and the Jews live on that."
"That's right, Bruno."
"Don't the Jews like the opposite, then?"
"No, it's us who don't like them, stupid."
Bruno frowned. Gretel had been told time and time again that she wasn't allowed to call him stupid, but still she persisted with it.
"Well, why don't we like them?" he asked.
"Because they're Jews," said Gretel.
"I see. And the opposite and the Jews don't get along?"
"No, Bruno," said Gretel.
But she said this slowly because she had discovered something unusual in her hair, and was examining it carefully.
"Well, can't someone just get them together and..."
Bruno was interrupted by the sound of Gretel breaking into a piercing scream, one that woke Mother up from her afternoon nap and brought her running into the bedroom to find out which of her children had murdered the other one. While experimenting with her hair, Gretel had found a tiny egg, no bigger than the top of a pin. She showed it to Mother, who looked through her hair, pulling strands of it apart quickly, before marching over to Bruno and doing the same thing to him.
"Oh, I don't believe it," said Mother angrily. "I knew something like this would happen in a place like this."
It turned out that both Gretel and Bruno had lice in their hair, and Gretel had to be treated with a special shampoo that smelled horrible, and afterwards she sat in her room for hours on end, crying her eyes out. Bruno had the shampoo as well, but then Father decided that the best thing was for him to start afresh, and he got a razor and shaved all Bruno's hair off, which made Bruno cry. It didn't take long, and he hated seeing all his hair float down from his head and land on the floor at his feet, but Father said it had to be done. Afterwards, Bruno looked at himself in the bathroom mirror, and he felt sick. His entire head looked misshapen now that he was bald, and his eyes looked too big for his face. He was almost scared of his own reflection.
"Don't worry," Father reassured him. "It'll grow back. It'll only take a few weeks."
"It's the filth around here that did it," said Mother. "If some people could only see the effect this place is having on us all."
When he saw himself in the mirror, Bruno couldn't help but think how much like Shmuel he looked now. And he wondered whether all the people on that side of the fence had lice as well, and that was why all their heads were shaved too. When he saw his friend the next day, Shmuel started to laugh at Bruno's appearance, which didn't do a lot for his dwindling self-confidence.
"I look just like you now," said Bruno sadly, as if this was a terrible thing to admit.
"Only fatter," admitted Shmuel. Chapter 17. Mother Gets Her Own Way. Over the course of the next few weeks, Mother seemed increasingly unhappy with life at Outwith, and Bruno understood perfectly well why that might be. After all, when they'd first arrived, he had hated it, due to the fact that it was nothing like home, and lacked such things as three best friends for life. But that had changed for him over time, mostly due to Shmuel, who had become more important to him than Carl or Daniel or Martin had ever been. But Mother didn't have a Shmuel of her own. There was no one for her to talk to, and the only person who she had been remotely friendly with, the young Lieutenant Kotler, had been transferred somewhere else. Although he tried not to be one of those boys who spends his time listening at keyholes and down chimneys, Bruno was passing by Father's office one afternoon while Mother and Father were inside having one of their conversations. He didn't mean to eavesdrop, but they were talking quite loudly, and he couldn't help but overhear. "It's horrible," Mother was saying. "Just horrible. I can't stand it anymore."
"We don't have any choice," said Father. "This is our assignment, and—"
"No, this is your assignment," said Mother. "Your assignment, not ours. You stay if you want to."
"And what will people think?" asked Father. "If I permit you and the children to return to Berlin without me, they will ask questions about my commitment to the work here."
"Work?" shouted Mother. "You call this work?" Bruno didn't hear much more because the voices were getting closer to the door, and there was always a chance that Mother would come storming out in search of a medicinal sherry, so he ran back upstairs instead. Still, he had heard enough to know that there was a chance they might be returning to Berlin, and to his surprise, he didn't know how to feel about that. There was one part of him that remembered that he had loved his own life back there, but so many things would have changed by now. Carl and the other two best friends whose names he couldn't remember would probably have forgotten about him by now. Grandmother was dead, and they almost never heard from Grandfather, who Father said had gone senile. But on the other hand, he'd grown used to life at Outwith. He didn't mind Herr List. He'd become much friendlier with Maria than he ever had been back in Berlin. Gretel was still going through a phase and keeping out of his way, and she didn't seem to be quite so much of a hopeless case anymore. And his afternoon conversations with Shmuel filled him with happiness. Bruno didn't know how to feel, and decided that whatever happened, he would accept the decision without complaint. Nothing at all changed for a few weeks. Life went on as normal. Father spent most of his time either in his office or on the other side of the fence. Mother kept very quiet during the day, and was having an awful lot more of her afternoon naps, some of them not even in the afternoon, but before lunch. And Bruno was worried for her health because he'd never known anyone need quite so many medicinal sherries. Gretel stayed in her room, concentrating on the various maps she had pasted on the walls, and consulting the newspapers for hours at a time before moving the pins around a little. Herr List was particularly pleased with her for doing this. And Bruno did exactly what was asked of him, and caused no chaos at all, and enjoyed the fact that he had one secret friend whom no one knew about. Then, one day, Father summoned Bruno and Gretel into his office and informed them of the changes that were to come.
"Sit down, children," he said,
indicating the two large leather armchairs that they were usually told not to sit in when they had occasion to visit Father's office because of their grubby mitts. Father sat down behind his desk.
"We've decided to make a few changes," he continued,
looking a little sad as he spoke.
"Tell me this. Are you happy here?"
"Yes, Father, of course," said Gretel. "Certainly, Father," said Bruno.
"And you don't miss Berlin at all?"
The children paused for a moment and glanced at each other, wondering which one of them was going to commit to an answer.
"Well, I miss it terribly," said Gretel eventually. "I wouldn't mind having some friends again."
Bruno smiled, thinking about his secret.
"Friends," said Father, nodding his head. "Yes, I've often thought of that. It must have been lonely for you at times."
"Very lonely," said Gretel in a determined voice.
"And you, Bruno?"
asked Father, looking at him now.
"Do you miss your friends?"
"Well, yes," he replied, considering his answer carefully. "But I think I'd miss people no matter where I went."
That was an indirect reference to Shmuel, but he didn't want to make it any more explicit than that.
"But would you like to go back to Berlin?" asked Father. "If the chance was there."
"All of us?" asked Bruno.
Father gave a deep sigh and shook his head.
"Mother and Gretel and you,"